Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry, with host Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Anthony Ingram calling from, where am I calling from? From the state of Washington, D.C., from the city of Washington, D.C., excuse me. I am really excited. Tonight we celebrate our 50th episode. 50 episodes. And I want to thank all the poets who called in over the course of the last year. And I want to thank the listeners who had an opportunity to take time to listen to the show. I really, really appreciate it. Acclaimed poet Cynthia Manick is here, and she will help us celebrate our 50th episode. Cynthia will join us shortly. What I'd like to do, though, is to read one of my favorite poems. I think it's an opportunity for me to read one of my favorite poems. And the poem is titled Caged Bird. It's by Dr. Maya Angelou. The free bird leaps on the back of the wind and floats downstream to the current ends, and dips his wings in the orange sun rays and dares to claim the sky. But a bird that stalks down his narrow cage can seldom see through his bars of rage. His wings are clipped and his feet are tied, so he opens his throat to sing. The caged bird sings with fearful trill of things unknown but longed for still, and his tune is heard on the distant hill, but the caged bird sings of freedom. The free bird thinks of another breeze, and the trade wind soft through the sighing trees, and the fat worms waiting on a dawn bright lawn, and he names the sky his own. But a caged bird stands on the grave of dreams, his shadow shouts on a nightmare scream, his wings are clipped and his feet are tied, so he opens his throat to sing. The caged bird sings with a fearful trill of things unknown but longed for still, and his tune is heard on the distant hill. The caged bird sings for freedom. Thank you very much. That's my little piece tonight in celebration of our 50th episode. I think Cynthia's with us now.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Hello, Cynthia. How are you?
I'm good. I love good. Your poetry voice.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
I'm going to call you Barry White soon. Barry White slash Michael.
Oh, I'm not supposed to be laughing. I'm supposed to be serious.
Hey, you can do both.
I'd like to thank you for joining me. Cynthia Manick, everybody. Cynthia.
Yes, Michael.
What is poetry?
Oh, wow. It's a big question. I think poetry gets us close to empathy. No one can experience everything, but without poetry and storytelling, we're just a collection of data points and dates in history. So poetry gets us every close to the human experience you can get.
All right. Well, then why is it important, with empathy being involved? Why is it important?
Because you can't learn or change if you don't know other perspectives. If you don't know how people live, how they think, how they feel, how can you use your imagination to grow and ask questions?
I like that very much. Well, what I'd like you to do is to share one of your works.
Okay, I'm going to read Self-Portrait Number 5, Phoenix and Lullabies.
I like that.
Some people think I was born savage, biting at hands, claws, and daggers, with no softness to be found, but I contain whispers, bright coral beads stacked, the language of blood jostling against itself, coconut oil, curves molded by my mother's thumb, broad bones, and something wild. Sometimes I'm a brown-bellied songbird who knows the tongue could be a land not beaten, the hot arc ache in someone's back while the TV's on. Or it can be a pistol. It covers all my gristle barbs, blue and yellow howls, and the ragdoll heart where I shook off my father's baritone the day he left. I turn brine lake that never stirs the same way twice, salt, assholes, and smiles balled over. It's not a lie to say I'm still learning to love the frames of undressed trees, my glasses, the Medusa hair that defies every comb, red pomegranates, my baby self, the little girl inside who still craves model trains, Josie and the Pussycats cartoon, and wonders about the spaces between the teeth and the ribs.
Tell us about that poem. What was the inspiration?
Well, my current professor, Nathalie Hando, charged me with writing self-portraits because there are so many different parts of ourselves. There's the sister, there's the friend, there's the worker, there's the poet, there's the lover. And how do you write about all those things at once? So I have about 8 or 9 self-portraits at this point. And this portrait basically try to tie in my childhood to who I am now. Like, what shaped me? How did I become who I am? And that goes from cartoons to Lola Modern Trains to Ragdoll when I was little to sort of maybe people see me how I see myself. It's a combination of things, I think. And the title Phoenix and Lullabies is sort of contrasts that. Lullabies being so soft and Phoenix rising from the ashes and burning too bright. I like the combination of contradictions in this poem.
Oh, very nice. Josie and the Pussycats.
Josie and the Pussycats. The black girl on the tambourine.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, maybe this leads into my next question. What sparked your interest in poetry?
Ooh.
Your initial love of it.
My initial love of it. Originally, well, when I was in high school, I was a huge nerd. I mean, like, I would travel with, like, 3 or 4 books in my bag. I was lost in stories and poems, and I had all these questions about how the world was working and how things were done. And some folks turned to music, some folks turned to visual art. To me, it was exploring that through words. It was poetry.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and then I think I read.
Please continue.
I think I read Nikki Giovanni's poems, and I was like, "Wow, a black girl can write about kind of stuff, and it'd be normal." And so I sort of realized, poetry is a thing that I can do. I can read about it and I can do it. So I started doing it.
Wow. Very nice. What are some of the predominant themes in your work?
I would say the body. Being a woman, being a black woman, because I'm black and woman all the time. Erasure,
okay.
My family. Culture. How I move in the world. How people see me. How I see myself. And the fear of the erasure, of not being present in storytelling as it is right now.
So you're a storyteller.
I think so, yeah. I think we all have these stories inside us, whether it's passed down from elders or whether it's from just living our lives. I think they're all stories. They're all a collection of moments that we need to be shared.
Well, tell us a story through one of your poems.
I will actually read Mind the Gap, a poem about the gap in my front teeth.
Okay.
It's called Mind the Gap. Little E wants a smile like mine. Teeth with a gap so wide, or corn husk and tugboat could pull through. Or a submarine, lost sounds and grunts. Tiny light bulbs if you're careful, or a string of Christmas lights loop through like garland. Does she know how the world works? How some of us are born without 40 acres and the weight of a mule on their chest? Like my mother and Monday mornings, boarding the F train and 2 buses with 2 children, her own Negro caravan. a sonata full of low watt clinics and hurling vowels like swords. How I often waited in those long ass lines and imagined myself a boy, a whirlwind digging in the muck where only muscles and gold matter. My tongue tries to reason with her, ring against her want, cause we don't choose what haunts us. When I was young, I craved closed spaces, bright veneers, the smile of Rudy Huxtable, or in bad days, Shirley Temple. No one notices a mouse when Bojangles is dancing.
You know, I had a gap.
Did you?
I had a gap for 44 years.
Until I decided to
wear braces. Braces?
Ah.
I thought if I could spend the first 40 with a gap, I could spend the second 40 with braces. That was my rationale. But back to you.
I understand. Well, you know what? I met someone who's like, I want the gap between your teeth. Getting it done professionally. And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, yeah, I'm getting it one put in. I was like, girl, I obviously have too much money that you should give to me, because who would go and get a gap professionally done? And I wrote that poem.
A gap, though, in some countries in Africa is a sign of royalty.
I've heard that.
Respect and,
and
eloquence. Yeah. So, again, you know,
Okay,
back to the program.
This is how poetry works. You know, you say one thing and it sparks another. It's a whole ecosystem. It's an ecosystem. We're getting there.
Let me ask you a question. How does a poem begin for you? With an idea, a form, or an image?
For me, it's usually an idea or an image. I usually don't start writing with a form until much later. It's usually an idea or an image, and it's usually on scrap paper. I usually have raggedy pieces of paper laying around, and I'll use that to start writing. And I'm also a big collector of words, so like if I see a word that I like in a book or from anything, I'll write it down. So I have like notebooks of words that I like. And I will pick up one of those notebooks, and I'll browse through it, see if anything fits, and that's how the poem will begin, on a scrap paper and a notebook. And then eventually it'll go to the laptop, where I will edit it and that kind of stuff, but it starts with scrap paper with an idea or an image.
Oh, wow, it's beautiful. Beautiful. Share another piece of your work.
Sure. Let me see. I'll do Dear Superman. Dear Superman, tell yourself what you will, that you wait patiently to tip your Clark hat and jaw to every Sarah, Lois, or bright-haired Jane. Women with coarse hair, pink lips, and cosmetics lightly placed, delicate shades that blush oh so nicely on paper, TV, and high-resolution film. But I see how the animal of your body passes by the dark girls. Girls with names like Esther, Delise, or Container Rose. Girls who wear glasses and dresses with the slip showing. Women of strong flavors, hot peppers between their legs, and a storm inside. Those girls secretly stir you from liver to toenail, and they too crave strong arms, a cape to cradle inside, and have dreams of sleeping between stars.
Tell us about that piece. That's very
powerful. I was Superman. You know, I think we, when we're young, we emulate and we love the superheroes. But I'm such a logical person. Like, part of me is very fanciful, and the part of me is like, you know what? Superman never serves girls with glasses. Every girl he saves is Caucasian, no glasses. Their names are like Mary or like, you know, there's no Esther's, there's no Jaleesa, there's no girls
or
I know being saved by Superman.
Lakeisha. No Lakeisha.
No champagne. He don't save those strippers. He don't save them. He just saves people, you know. And so I started getting mad, and was led to a poem. That's what usually happens. I get pissed off. I was like, you know, I'm writing about this. And this poem is called Dear Superman.
Well, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Sure.
We are back. I'm here with Cynthia Manick. Your host is no longer feeling befuddled, so which is a good thing. A host should never befuddle.
It's not my fault. I did nothing.
Oh, we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it at the conclusion of the episode tonight. Okay, listen. All great writers have great writing influences. Who are some of yours, and what makes them great in your eyes?
Ooh. Okay, so Lucille Clifton is amazing. She was amazing at writing poems that were small, tight, but so important. I think her and Gwendolyn Brooks really made formalizing Black stories normal. You know, it doesn't have to be about Shakespeare. It could be about in your kitchen. It could be about your kid. It could be about walking down the street. They made Black stories important and normal for poetry. Vivi Francis is a great poet who I call her a Black unicorn, because she'll come and be brilliant and then retreat to her house in the woods. She's just like this brilliant poet who's really good about making you ask questions of yourself about why you write the way you write. Nikki Finney is a fantastic writer who asks questions about the world. She wants your poetry to not only connect to yourself, but to your family, to your block, to your city, to your state. She's really about how poetry can extend outside of yourself. Tehemba Jess, who won the Pulitzer, he's amazing for music. Like, he really sort of pushes the envelope of how music can influence writing and how you should be proud of that, proud of your connection to music. C.D. Wright, who I didn't know personally, but
yes,
a friend of mine knew her, and she gave her great advice. She told her, in the poem, you gave me deer here, but I want venison. So now when I write, I think about venison. How do I get venison in my poem? How do I get specific in my poem? To get deer, what's common. How do I get what's unique to me in my poetry? Tracy K. Smith and Tina Chang, they're really good about being smart in their work. You know, you can see in their poems, everything builds on top of another. One question leads to an answer, answer leads to an image, image leads to a memory. They're both so brilliant about connecting parts of themselves in the work. Larae Van Cleef Stefanon and Ada Limon, who are fantastic writers who advocate about writing about joy. I think we, as poets, we sort of get used to writing about pain and about writing about how things, you know, are horrible. But Ada and Larae really advocate that poetry can be more than a list of traumas. It can be a list of joy as well. Yeah, and lastly, my current teacher, Natalie Handel, who's teaching me now the self and relationship to poetry. So those are some of my favorites right there.
Wow, very nice, very nice. Poets hail from all over the world. Where do you hail from?
Ooh, I hear from Brooklyn via South Carolina.
Okay.
My parents are from South Carolina, and so a lot of my poetry has limits. I think a lot of mother sayings. She's very southern sayings that I cannot seem to escape. It comes into my poetry. Then also Brooklyn is in there, I think, the sort of cynical part of me who's always aware of my surroundings at all times. That's in my poetry as well. Then you have, and I went to school in Virginia, so you have the sort of bless your heart sort of thing in my poetry too. And then you have Brooklyn again, like, girl, don't bless your heart, get out of my face. That's in there too. So there's a lot of me, and I'm also Gemini. So there's a lot of me in my poetry, I think. It's true. Poetry is never one thing for me. I think it's a multitude of things.
Well, do you think that you were meant to be a poet?
Ooh, when I was little, I wanted to be president when I was little. And so
Okay.
that's too much work. That's too much work. So I think after the president thing, I was like, well, I should work in business so I can have a job. Because you know how black families are. You got to have a job. I don't care what else you're doing, but I'd have a job. So my second course was like, I'll be in business administration. And then I was like, God, it's so boring. It's so boring. And so right now I work at nonprofit that I like. And then on the side, well, my on the side, I guess in half time, I do poetry and I teach and I run a reading series. So I sort of get my creative fill.
Hello?
Yeah, did I lose you?
Yes.
Hello, hello. Yeah, I'm
Yes.
still
Can
here.
you hear me now? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yes.
Okay.
Where'd you
So
go?
there's
Are you drinking
no,
over
where did
there?
you go?
Where did you go?
I
So you say. I'm giving you a side eye through my computer.
I've been here every week for 50 weeks.
Are you pulling out data? You gonna pull out data out of me? Okay.
Recite a poem, please.
Okay, I will do. this poem is okay. Stop laughing. I start laughing too. Okay,
Okay, all
so
right.
this poem is called "I Try to Imagine Them Smitten." I've never seen my parents kiss or try to be silver dollars in each other's pockets. One photo, they're on a green love seat. The plastic cover looks too sweaty to touch. Dad is standing to the side, afro sheen bright as paint, mouth curved to sing something alive. My mom is seated, brown legs crossed and bare. Clasping hands, they hold close those disappearing things, slow dancing to Marvin's Mercy, Mercy Me, a mumbling river, a blue patchwork quilt, its ends ragged to touch, and a bowl of honeydew melon, save for midnight when the kids are asleep. Did it ever touch like bathwater on ankles, a whispered thought so hot only the dust could hear? I tried to imagine them smitten, past the slammed doors, past the obsidian quiet, to side glances and half speak. But maybe it only happened once in a South Carolina grove where only the moon could see.
You reminded me of my own parents.
Ah.
I mean, that one was really, really touching, you know. Wow. You know, all poets have several words that come up over and over again. Words or sentences that they just can't help but use in their work. What are three of your absolute favorite words to use?
When I wrote Blue Hallelujahs, my editor was like, you have peaches in this book like 15 times. And so I had to do a word search. I had peaches literally a lot. Okay, so I had to go out and take them out, put plums instead. So peaches is definitely one of my go-to words.
Okay.
Dark is another one that I'm trying to get away from because dark can mean so many different things.
Yes,
It can mean
it
skin, it can mean feeling. It could mean way of life. So dark is another one. And thirdly, I want to say body. I think we go through so many things through the body, whether it's talking to people, whether it's interacting with others, whether it's surviving hardship. The body takes a toll of all of it. So I think body is a lot in my poems. The word body, yeah.
You know, there's so much happening in the world today.
Mm-hmm.
And poets having an opportunity to lift their voices is so important. What do you see as being the role of a poet in modern day society?
You know, I think it's twofold. Number one is to tell the stories around us, tell what's happening, to report, you know, how the world is evolving or de-evolving, as the case may be. But it's also to share other parts of ourselves. I mean, because if we only write about what hates us, we'll forget to fight for what loves us. So you have to write about who you love, going to work, teaching your kid how to ride a bike. You have to do both. You can't forget one without the other. Yes, world is going up in flames, but I still go to work tomorrow. I'm still falling in love tomorrow. I'm still eating a ham sandwich tomorrow. And that's going to be part of poetry as well. So the poet's job is to do all those things, to describe the world experience, not just the immediate, but the smaller things as well.
Share another piece of your work.
Sure. I'm going to read Letter to 1991. It's a little bit longer piece. Letter to 1991. You should be 13 now, and Dad still calls you Simbo, a nickname we crave to shake loose like pimples and oatmeal cream little Debbie cakes. You worry too much. You worry about Mom and Dad, the music of something breaking. It's red with light, all the noise sometimes. Put your head in a book of sand, bring your little brother in the back room, and close the door. There's a suitcase full of hurt there, and no, you can't unpack it. Think of that summer when you were 6, and our foot slipped into a house of red ants, the biting up your right leg, the stings and the buzzing. Mama told you to pretend like you were a possum, play dead as rivulets of alcohol drip down dark as blood. The insects fell one by one, dead little bodies all over the place. Mama held you next to the fullness of her thighs. You didn't cry. No hollering or heaving. Take hold of that memory now. Rub it between your fingers. The secret of living in this body is time. And all the worrying is like walking backwards on a track. You think I don't know you? Your favorite word is appellation because of the way consonants and vowels curl around the tongue. This is a time you should only dream dreams. But now you should know that sometimes you have to write in order to figure out what you can never say.
In order to figure out what you can never say, what you can never say.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that particular line.
I think, you know, when you're growing up, you're feeling all these emotions. You're going through all these changes. I think when I was in junior high school, I think my parents officially split up. And so you have all these things you want to say, but you don't know how to say them. You're upset, you're angry, you're sad, you don't know what to do. And I think language sort of helps you find what to do. It tells you how to say what you want to say. It tells you how to hold things close, what to let go. I think language sort of gives you the tools you need to process.
I like that. Has your idea of what poetry is and what it can do changed since you began writing poetry?
You know, when I began writing it, I thought it would just be for myself. I know I had no idea that I would actually be doing it as a career. So I think it's changing that. When I was doing my book tour, I met so many people who wasn't into poetry, but my poem touched them in some way.
Yes.
I read a poem in New Paltz, and it was about, you know, I think it was an animal poem. And anyway, this woman comes up to me. She was like, you know, I don't really like poetry, but, you know, my father used to skin deer. And we went through this whole conversation about how her father skinned deer and her watching that and how my poem brought the memory up for her. And I was part grossed out because she skinned a deer. But then I was also part just, you know, wow, this poem connects her somewhere in her memory. It brought something out of her. So I like the part that poetry can sort of connect people from different places. They can all bring out one feeling. And I also like that poetry is sort of more accessible these days. Between the internet and social media, everyone can read a poem. Everyone can understand a poem. Everyone can feel one thing from this one poem. So I think poetry sort of has the ability to sort of connect us all about something.
What makes a poem good?
Oh, that depends on the day. That depends on the day. It depends. I mean, if I'm reading a poem, a good poem is a poem that sort of blends craft with heart, meaning that the craft is there, the logic is there, the lines are there, the breaks are there, the metaphors are there, the similes are there, but also it has heart, meaning that I can see the poet behind all these craft tools. The best poems combine both of those things, intent and craft, I believe.
That was beautifully stated. Craft plus heart equals poetry.
Craft plus heart, yeah.
You've been published. Blue Hallelujah. Tell us about
yes.
your book.
You sound like you're accusing me. You're accusing me. Yes, I've been published. Yes, officer.
Okay, I'll say it differently. You've written a book.
Thank you. Thank you. That tone was welcoming.
Yes. And the title is Blue Hallelujahs. Would you tell us about that, please?
Blue Hallelujahs. You know, I think I love that title because it's musical, but it also encapsulates so many things. Because you think of hallelujahs in the church, you see, you know, people are falling out, people are filled with emotion, and it's sort of this like frenzy. Then you have the word blue that sort of tempers it down. Because blue can be anything. It can be the blues, it can be the soul, it can be movement, it can be just the color, it can be sadness. The hallelujahs can bring it up and bring it down. So I think the combination of blue hallelujah sort of encapsulates, you know, if you're breathing, what makes you alive? Is it dancing? Is it family? Is it friends? Is it love? Is it sex? What is it? Is it memory? Is it imagination? I think the book tries to sort of answer all of those questions or give you options at least.
Wow. Share another piece of your work.
Sure. I'm going to do... this poem, I actually wrote this poem because, you know, I was wondering about when, you know, people give birth, you know, what the first thought that they have. And I was curious. So this poem came out of that. What's passed down in the making? Sometimes I smile just like my mother, as if the skin and gums remember the day I was born. Between thick thighs and southern jasmine, I arrived as a red-throated anthill, as busy. And maybe the moon was in my half-blind eyes, but I felt what was handed down. Darkling skin, luminous. Grandmother's brass comb, its teeth well used. Veins of an ancient past. Some was into prayers to put me on the side of right, in the galloping heart of a jukebox. But what did my mother dream when she knew how much hunger the dark could contain, how close we are to mindsets behind plantation-born juleps? She saw a girl surrounded by words and light, holding the body stove close like girls are taught, hands teaching the art of pepper oil, feet striding a ground, bursting with fire, lip to lips.
Your story could be my story. My parents, my mother hails from South Carolina as well.
Oh,
so
wow.
My grandmother, I'm from North Carolina. But my grandmother, I remember her with her comb.
Yes.
Totally similar. Your work is very accessible. Very accessible. Was that on purpose?
No, I think it's just me.
Okay.
I think it's just me. I like writing poems that I like, poems that I can get into, poems that I can sort of reread over and over again and have another memory of it. So I think I like writing poems that can be accessed, that are stories that everyone can sort of feel and get a sense of.
Let's take a brief break and we'll be right back. I'm here with Cynthia Manick. If you have a question for Cynthia, the telephone number is 646-787-1631, and we'll be right back. We are back. I'm Michael Anthony Ingram. I'm here with Cynthia Manick, and we are celebrating the 50th episode of QLP. Cynthia.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Cynthia, you may have already answered this question, but I just want to hear it again. Writers and poets write for a myriad of reasons. Some write primarily to speak a message to their audience. Others write because to stay silent is not an option. Why do you write?
Ooh, I think the answer changes every day.
Oh, wow.
Some days it's so I don't be silent. Some days it's to resist erasure that's happening in the world. Some days it's to share what I know with others. Some days it's to vent. Other days to celebrate. I think it changes day by day. Yeah, day by day, I think it changes. But day by day, yeah. I think also, you know, a body written is a body seen. Sometimes you're writing to make sure you exist, that you are in the world, in other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm. What then is a measure of success of a poet? What's a measure of success as a poet?
Ooh. Well, some folks will say, well, it depends. Okay, I think originally the first measure of success is writing a poem and being happy with it. Because
okay.
I know so many people who have written poems and aren't call themselves poets. They don't think the poem is done. They don't think they've earned the right to call themselves poets. I think if you've written a poem and you're proud of it, you're a poet. I also think getting it published in literary magazines, even just online, sharing your work with others, putting yourself in the poetry community that way, also is a measure of success. Getting a book published is always a nice measure of, it's a nice measure of success. Also, connecting to your peers. Having your peers respect, that's also a measure of poetry. Of knowing that your work talks to other people's work, so they conversate with each other, I think. Yeah. There's different levels of success, I think. Different measurements you can take.
Well, share another of your successful poems.
You know what? We talked a little about how poets respond to the world around them. I'm going to do this poem called 3 a.m. and the moon is curled like a sea. 3 a.m. and the moon is curled like a sea. And I didn't dream of coffins today or the scattering of names or trees I can never recall. Instead, there was a silver dog chasing joy in the shape of a hat. Along the cousin eating Jack and Jill cookies, and my hands held fistfuls of not yet ripe tomatoes that needed a dark place or bag to become true. Don't you go shopping or check on a relative? The dream book says tomatoes symbolize harmony, but my mind wonders how long it takes for stars to burn out, and if his last beats are like a bear for the heart and love for the very first time. I once read that black poets write love poems the least, as if we're too busy swallowing mouthfuls of dust, tiling wounds, knowing how often atoms fissure and our bodies part. But can we not do both? Banish the lines, go braless and numb, fumble in the dark with the sweat so sweet, he or she is well fed. Fill pages with bathwater and breath ungraceful, movement like a train of yellow flowers because it's what we saw on our very first date. In another dream, I see the ugly beautiful of a newly painted train, as if a ghost through pure light. People both alive and past are full of bright colors I can't name. It moves so smooth, my ear barely recognizes the revolving jubilee, the sky inside all of their hands.
I don't know what to say. Maybe just allowing it to just soak in is the most
right. Actually,
thing.
I actually wrote that poem in the woods. I was I said I read it in the woods, which I'm not a woods person. I'm not a woods person. But I was in the woods at McDowell Colony, and I was in the cabin, and I wrote that poem because I wasn't really writing about the black things, my police officers. And just one day I was just so annoyed. And then I woke up and I realized that my dream, I had a nice dream. And which really, it really happens that way. If you have a nice dream the night before, it's
yes.
Usually your body's way of sort of recycling on the images you've seen all day. And it's usually violent, it's the news. But that night I was like, oh my God, I had no confidence in my dream last night. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a poem, and that was a poem about how poets can do both. Poets can write about the first date you ever had and violence in the news. You can write about both. You can flex between tenderness and awe, tenderness and sadness, tenderness and pain. Poetry can do both of those things.
You live poetry, don't you?
I do. I think I do. Yeah.
Live and breathe poetry. Now, some poets are also active in other creative activities. What are some of your mm-hmm. favorite non-poetry or literature activities?
Ooh. Non-poetry-related activities. Oh, God. Okay, I'm a workaholic.
Yes.
Let me really think about what I don't do that's revolved around poetry. I like Zumba. I do Zumba. I do Zumba. I love to go to music events. I'm also a trustee of the Austin Foundation, where we give grants to awesome projects in New York City. That's month to month. I also just love doing creative things. Like, I love going to speakeasies. Like, I love finding the rare places in New York to go to. I went to a burlesque show a couple of weeks ago. Like, I love to find unique. Yeah, it was amazing. And I was like, these girls are talented. I do not have that kind of skills. But they were really, really amazing. So I love to go to events where I'm out of my element and I learn something new. Yeah. Mm.
Wow, you are an amazing person.
I'm an alpha, thank you. Thank you.
Yes. You know, they say that to see the world with complete honesty, one should look to comedians, artists, and poets. What do you think emerges naturally from your work?
Ooh, what emerges naturally?
Yes.
Musicality. I think I have a lot of musicality in my work. Yeah, I think this is the way I read things. There's always musicality in my work. There's always movement. Like, the way the body moves is also in my work as well. I like poems that sort of use the page, that sort of goes back and forth. That sort of dialogue sort of works in my poems as well. I think also just the way imagination. I think I'm always wondering about how things are working. Like, what are the stars doing right now? I'm curious. You know, I'm a natural curious person. So that curiosity comes out in my work as well.
Well, share another piece of your work, please.
Sure. This is from my cousin Michael, who passed away a couple years ago.
All right.
It's called I Saw You on a Delta Queen. The hill of Biloxi has trapped your voice. Warm molasses bursting in air. I saw you on the Delta Queen, streaming down river. Your skin, a bed of peach with eyelashes like fans. I forget you are dead now. The coarse sugar of memories are strangled into knots, soaked through like sand. In mirrors, a silver shadow settles over line and limb like a hot bruise or two conch shells pressed together. Around me, I hear an elegy in fields, island roots pushing through, frogs bleeding at shallow ends, and the rattle of brown things at night. A reminder that I, too, was once part of the green and the dirt. Trudging through fields of old grape arbors, now I see the dark bodies of three giant or furling avocado trees, and it's you, watching over us like African gods.
Like an African god.
Mm-hmm. I had dreams about him, and he was on a riverboat. And I was like, what are you doing? I was like, Cousin Michael, what are you doing? So I woke up and I wrote this poem about him being on the riverboat. He had passed away years before. And I was like, wow, he's still in my subconscious. He's still hanging around with me.
Still hanging around. I like
still
that
hanging
very
around.
Much.
He's still hanging around.
What role should a title play for a poem? Do you like working with titles?
You know, I taught a class this summer at Poets House, and I told my students hate me. They love me, but they hate me. Because they would come to class with these titles, and I would say, look, titles are like the door to a fun house. Without a good title, I will plummet to my death. So you need to give me a title that will orient me to this poem. So that's what I believe. I think titles are very important. You can put a title on after the poem is done, but a title is a spotlight. It's telling me which way I should go. Because without a title, I'll go anywhere, everywhere. I won't go down the path you created for me. So titles are very important.
All right, all right. Share another piece of your work. I'm really excited that you're with me tonight. I think what better person to help me bring in 50 episodes. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. Okay,
yes.
So I'm going to read the poem that the Academy of American Poets published that I really like. It's called Things I Would Tell My Children About Destiny. You remind them of weighted tumbleweeds, hen egg brown. Don't let them take the rag time beneath your skin. It stirs earth's curvature and the quiet of frogs when you enter or leave a room. Don't leave a swallow of juice or milk in the fridge. A body grieved is a whole new body. Give your shadow a name big as a star. See yourself out loud. Pick wild irises. The best gifts roll under a rib cage. Leave open mouth splendid. I like your smile unpinned. Keep your birdsong close. Imagine an hourglass full of architects and dreamers. The first taste of fresh scooped ice cream. You will learn to master camouflage among ordinary things. Men who spill words, not thoughts, trigger fingers, ready, brain loose. I love your smile, unpinned.
Wow. Please share one more.
One more. You know what? One more. Okay. You know, I was actually doing, I did an interview a couple of years ago, and I wrote a poem about it because it asked me why I wrote poetry. So I started thinking about all the reasons why I wrote poetry. So the poem is called Why Deliver Beast, a.k.a. Write Poetry. To feel rivers and a moving sun, so scars fold in on themselves. My skin is too dark to blush, because even kneecaps are sexy. To offer you a plate, There are holes in the world. Legally, I'm not allowed to watch autopsies. I don't know how to love. I love way too much. I eat watermelons in secret. Something is always trying to kill me. I know how to be hungry. I want you to know fear. The terrain under my breast is rough. There's not enough room for ashes. The terrain under my breast is smooth. There's whiskey in my piss, so I don't snap necks to see a name and know it's mine. A noose is on our breath. I love washing beans on a Sunday.
What do you want your poetry to do? Where do you want it to go?
Ooh, where I want it to go. You know, I think it being in print is where I want it, where it is right now, and I like it that place. I want it to go to youth, to women, to girls who think they can't do what they want to do. I want it to go into communities where reading and writing isn't valued and make sure it is valued. You know, I wanted to be in history of documenting where I've been, where my people have been. I think I wanted to be in people's hearts if possible.
That's beautiful.
That's really
you
ambitious.
Know,
that's really ambitious,
yes,
actually.
Yes, you are. You're extremely ambitious.
Let's roll that back. The heart is too much. You know, the people in history is good.
But what I feel is ambition that is doable. That is doable. You know,
thank you.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
You know,
you have
as
a saying,
you think about,
you know, crazy doable, crazy not doable. So,
I'm gonna write that down. I've been thinking that there's a lot.
It's true, because I have crazy ideas all the time, and I'm like, that's not really doable.
Let me finish.
Okay, go ahead. I'm at your attention. It's your show.
That is true, but sometimes I don't know. Okay, poetry. We think about it. We do it. We write it. It's out there. What are some of the prevalent ingredients that go into the concoction that we call a poem?
Concoction, that's a great word. Intent. I think intent has to be intent. Yeah. You have to want to write a poem. You know, I was actually teaching my class, and someone said, you know, this is a true story. And I said, well, it doesn't mean it's interesting. And I felt bad. I was like, it's a true story, but it's not poetry. Intent has to be there. You have to want to share your work via this poem. You have to be willing to embody a moment in this poem, in this one page. So intent is a must. Breath. Where the line breaks equals breath. So breath is a must. Where does a person breathe in reading this poem? How do they breathe in reading this poem? And thirdly, intent, breath, and I want to say heart. Heart again. Yeah, because I mean, if I want to write a poem about a lamp, that's fine, but what does a lamp mean to me? Why this lamp? And I think Natalie Diaz was talking to me one day about apples and how everyone knows what an apple is, right? You know, it can be red, it can be green, it's round, but it's the poet's job to make you see their apple, that particular apple. Now, where heart comes in.
Intent, breath, and heart.
Yeah, I think so. Those are the top three.
Wow, very nice, very nice. You know, I'm not going to hold you all night long.
No,
I
really?
Judy,
you got time, obviously.
Okay. Would you do me a favor and just recite one more? And then I got one more question after that, and then the celebration will be over.
Okay, one more poem. You know
yes.
what? Yes, I will do. Yes, I will do How a Poet Carries Weight. How a Poet Carries Weight. I'm trying not to become one of those disappearing things. Exotic creatures, a body covered by afghans or a face behind an opaque veil. I stopped reading Glamour, Cosmo, and Photoshop Weekly because those magazines, they can't handle the pine beneath my bark, lushness and curves, the round rows above the pubis, how I glitter from inside out and write odes to the ovaries, playing the samba, sonnets to the urethra, and contrapuntals of the rib. How each poem jockeys for position like climbing up a complex DNA scale, because I know how to carry weight. My mama taught me to bind the heart to a cave of scarves, manage all 200 bones of my body, my sister's body, and yours. When in doubt, I look to Gwendolyn, Phyllis, and Lucille, standing still in my umbra, the darkest part of my shadow, and know I can survive any type of burning.
What's next for you? I'm sure when people hear your work, when they read your book, they want to know what's next.
What's next? Well, I also have a reading series called Soul Sister Review. We just celebrated our 6th year, so I'm releasing an anthology, actually, in November. Poetry compilation with Tricia Smith, Evie Shockley, Joshua Bennett, about 40 poets. It's out November 1st. That's next on my list, November 1st.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank you for joining me tonight. I've had so much fun. Hopefully
Yay.
You got an opportunity to have fun, too.
I did. You asked me really good questions, and I was like, wow, you're really smart. Those 50 episodes have not been in vain.
I try. Well, I'm not going to ask you anything else, but I'd like to say, again, thank you very much. And to our listening audience, I want to thank you as well. We're beamed all over the world, and I'm proud of this show.
You should be. It's gorgeous what you're doing. And so thank you for having me. Thank you for asking me great questions about poetry and craft and heart. And thank you for listening to my poetry. I really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Your poetry is great. It's fantastic. All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.